Movies On Up with our Pitch Black discussion episode. Sometimes the best defense is a wise guy. I'm Ryan, the wise guy sitting directly across from me, Mr. Dave Bisella.
The black tier pitch.
I was thinking you would be like the Fry to my Riddick, yeah?
Is there a Fry? Well, I don't get the Fry.
Yeah,
reference.
That was the girl.
Oh, Roger Mitchell?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think that's her name.
Maybe it's better if I say like the Johns to my Riddick.
I don't even know who that is.
I'm not good with character names. No, you're awful with character names.
I know actor names.
Everybody knows that, but that's why I'm trying to like give you the three principles in the movie in the first minute of the podcast so that maybe by the time we get to the end of it, you'll actually
There's still going to be Cole Hauser and Roger Mitchell.
All right. Well, I was saying that you were the Cole Hauser to my Vin Diesel.
All right. Or I could be the Keith David to your David Keith. Because one of them was in this.
It was Keith David.
Yes.
So, now we pretty much run down the entire cast. We've also run down our tagline for this week. The best defense is a wise guy. If you know what movie that tagline is from, send your guess to us in an email, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can send it directly at us via the Twitter sphere, @moviesonup on Twitter. You can leave your guess on our Facebook page, which can be found at facebook.com/moviesonup. Or I'm sure, if by simply navigating your way to moviesonup.com, you can probably leave your guess somewhere on the page for this very episode. If you do any of those things, if your guess is correct, and if we choose you, you may just be the winner of our Movies On Up prize package, which for this week may or may not include an autographed copy of Pitch Black signed by Mr. Dave Bisella.
With Chronicles of Riddick and some cartoon.
Yeah, the Riddick cartoon. It's not like a Turtles cartoon or anything.
Yeah, I'm keeping those.
So that's what you have to look forward to. If you can figure out what movie belongs to the tagline, the best defense is a wise guy. That's pretty much our top of the show. We do it the same every week. We introduce ourselves. We ramble for a bit. We talk about our tagline contest. And then once we get done with that, the real show begins. And it always begins with what, Dave?
A bonus list.
Featuring this week our top five movies starring Cole Hauser, or as he will be known for the rest of this podcast,
Cole Hauser.
Number five.
School Ties.
Number four.
Paparazzi.
Is that a Lady Gaga reference?
Yes.
All right. Number three.
White Oleander. I don't remember him in this movie, but I love that movie.
But apparently he was
Alison
in there.
Alison Lohman is a doll.
Number two.
Higher Learning.
And number one, a callback from last week.
Good Will Hunting. I like this Cole Hauser in Good Will Hunting. I actually like a lot. Little funny thing about Cole Hauser in that movie, he's the fourth friend. It's Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, Casey Affleck, and Cole Hauser, who spends pretty much every scene he's in with his head down on the table, just drunk. And he had a lot more lines in the original script, but he told Matt and Ben, hey, why not have Casey take all the lines so that he talks too much and I'm just the guy that's just passed out all the time. And it turns out that's his best acting performance because he didn't have to talk.
Great career move for him.
Yes.
Or he was in the Riddick films, and Casey Affleck went on to be nominated for an Oscar. So, good on you, Cole Hauser.
Kill the family. That's all I ask. If you've seen Paparazzi, you know what that means. Just kill the family off. Don't be a pussy.
No pussies allowed in 2000's Pitch Black, directed by David Twohey, starring, of course, Vin Diesel, Cole Hauser, and Roda Mitchell. This will be the last time that we refer to them as their human names. We're going to go character names from here on out. Got it, Dave?
Cole Hauser and Roger Mitchell.
Yep, that's their characters. This movie, budget was $23 million. It made just over $39 million domestically, about another $14 worldwide for a grand total of about $53 million, which puts it number 1,723 on the all-time box office list. Dave, do you want to guess which two movies are directly above and directly below Pitch Black?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me to list all the movies that are ahead of it.
All 1,722.
Yes. I would guess U-571 and Ferngully.
Close, but no cigar. The movie actually directly above it, Three Amigos. And directly below it, The Adventures of Shark Boy and Lava Girl 3D.
Oh,
so
boy.
That tells you what kind of rarefied air Pitch Black
is. Do you have a date on this? Was this like a February-March release, right?
It opened February 18th,
okay.
2000.
It didn't open number one.
Number
it opened
three.
Like Okay.
Behind the whole nine yards and Hanging Up, 1 and 2 that week. It also opened the same week as a movie we talked about last week as well, Boiler Room.
Oh, I love Boiler Room. Yeah. Oh, that's two Vin Diesel movies.
Two Vin Diesel movies, both opened the same week. Boiler Room, I think, was in the top 10, but it was significantly lower than Pitch
Black. That was the first time I saw Vin Diesel, was Boiler Room.
Yeah, you didn't see. Actually, this was your first time with
Pitch
Black.
Oh, yeah, this is my first time seeing Pitch Black. And after watching it, spoiler alert, I know why I waited so long.
I'm relatively certain that I did see this movie in anticipation for the Chronicles of Riddick theatrical release. So I know I have seen this at least once. I believe this was my second time with it. We first started talking about Riddick, the new movie, the trailer for the new one.
Yeah.
When that came out, I mentioned that I thought that it looked very much like this movie. And you at that
I
point,
hadn't seen them, and right. I thought it looked more like a sequel to Pitch Black than whatever Chronicles of Riddick was.
Yeah, I still don't really know what Chronicles of Riddick was.
I might just watch it because I have the DVD, but I don't know that I could get through it.
It's rough. And I actually don't mind Pitch Black. I think it's a pretty decent movie. If you're kind of on the fence about Pitch Black and you don't necessarily like the character of Riddick, the Chronicles of Riddick is really going to rub you the wrong way.
That's my problem with it is Riddick's not that interesting of a character. There was no depth to him. There was no story that I cared about. This was a disposable monster movie. And how it became a trilogy.
I agree in parts of what you said. I think that, you know, the character in and of itself is not necessarily strong enough to have an entire series.
He doesn't need his own chronicles.
No, clearly not. But I think it's slightly more than just your kind of monster of the week, disposable monster movie. I think that there was an attempt to have there be depth with the character of Riddick. I think the performance of Vin Diesel was very one-dimensional, which kind of...
And that's it. Like, if you put somebody with some kind of depth...
Like a Cole Hauser.
Like Tom Hardy in this kind of role. Somebody who can act.
Or a Michael Fassbender. Let's just...
I was going to say him, but then I said Tom Hardy instead. Okay. He's on Twitter now, by the way, and he posted pictures of him with a new puppy. Adorable.
Tom Hardy did.
Yeah. But Vin Diesel was just flat. He didn't even come off as intimidating or frightening or anything. Like, he was just there.
The takeaway that I had with this character of Riddick was that he was kind of your quintessential anti-hero, but he was almost forced on you in that. Like, the couple characters in film and not quite film that came to mind when I think of Vin Diesel or when I think of Riddick, Boba Fett kind of comes to mind as sort of, he's a bad guy, but people seem to gravitate towards him
and
they like him.
He was a cool bad guy.
Well, that was the thing. At no point in any of the Star Wars movies was Boba Fett a main character. He's clearly, you know, the focus of this movie and moving forward, the focus of the franchise. And that seemed forced. I mean, the Boba Fett thing just kind of happened. People thought, he looks kind of cool. He's got some cool gadgets. That's all right. And then kind of the other thing I was thinking about, it's not a movie reference, but I started thinking about professional wrestling, like in the late 90s with Stone Cold. He reminded me of somebody like a Stone Cold Steve Austin that was a bad guy, and you weren't supposed to like him, but he was just too cool for you not to like.
See, that's what I wanted from him, but there was nothing there. Like, they talked about how bad he was. I never got a feeling that he was this terrible human. Like, I never got this feeling that he was just a killing machine. Like, I never got that. Like, Cole Hauser talked him up. Like, what if we don't know he's coming? Oh, there'll be no shots. Like, he talked him up like he's this just vicious, like, stealthy killing machine, and I never got that.
I mean, the only times you really saw him being the stealthy killing machine was when he was killing the aliens. Spoiler alert.
Like, once.
Yeah. At no point, to what you're saying, does he ever really pose a threat to any of the shipmates or
humans?
Whatever. Yeah, peoples. Whatever you want to call him, he is pretty one-dimensional in the fact that, and he says several times, like, you know, you don't really have, you ain't got to worry about me. It's these hammerhead creatures.
Yeah, these lame, terrible monsters that apparently only like the top halves of people.
Yeah, they seem to fight over the top halves. The bottom halves are kind of like, I guess they're like white meat kind of people, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I guess let's just go ahead and just jump into the top half of this movie. And
which I would prefer the, oh, I like the back half better.
I'll bet you do. Right at the start, we get Vin Diesel doing a monologue, which I don't think is a very good way to start a movie.
Vin Diesel talking is a terrible way to start. And Vin Diesel shouldn't be doing any monologues. Actually,
yeah.
The less Vin Diesel dialogue, the better.
Yes.
Definitely no on the monologue.
It really carries nothing. There's no inflection in it. It's just a kind of a monotone talk about cryo sleep, which he's in with everybody else on this ship. And, you know, it's in cryo sleep, they say that your brain shuts down except for the animal part, which is why he's still around, because he is just an animal. I think this is really the first time, and it's only about a minute in, where you get the impression that Vin Diesel is just a caged animal.
But here's
or Riddick. I'm doing what I yell at you for.
But
doing.
Here's what I don't like is that it starts off with his monologue, so it's really like shoving it down your throat that this is a Riddick movie. Because he doesn't show up for like 20, 25 more minutes.
Yeah, it does kind of pitch him as being the lead, and we do go through quite a few minutes before he gets introduced into the story. We see quite a bit of Fry and her shipmate early on, as the ship is, I don't know if they ever really tell you exactly why it's crashing, like it could have been meteors, comets, but whatever, something tears through the ship and it causes them to kind of crash land, which I kind of thought that scene was pretty cool.
It was long.
It went on for quite a while.
It was like 15-minute crash scene.
I don't think that's factual.
It was long.
It may have been long. But part of the things that I did like was sort of the disintegration of the ship. I thought looked kind of neat. There were times in this movie where the CG wasn't ridiculously impressive. But I thought, at least during the crash scene, that it was pretty cool. I liked seeing the ship tear apart. But, you know, you could kind of see outside as they were crash landing the landscape go by. And I thought that was pretty neat. And it also kind of sets up sort of an inner turmoil with Fry's character. She wanted to just dump all of the passengers, Riddick, and you know all the innocent ones as well, so that her and the remaining crew member didn't end up dying. And I think that maybe more so, definitely more so than the Riddick character, we kind of see sort of a transformation with the Fry character from being kind of in it for herself.
You kind of see it. It's shoved down your throat.
I mean, yeah, it's shoved down your throat, but at least you can, there's a change there. There should have been that same change in the Riddick character, but there isn't. And that's equally a shoved down your throat. It's just, I guess what I'm saying, that as an actor, Rada Mitchell is probably a little bit better than Vin Diesel.
Little bit. Like, not much, but a little bit.
At least capable of some sort of emoting.
Yes, she understands an arc and is able to follow an arc. Vin Diesel just has straight line.
Indeed. So after the ship does crash land, Fry ends up not ejecting everyone and presumably causing them all to die if she were to have ejected them, even as late as it seemed to be in the crash process, that they would be kind of screwed. She is convinced by the other crew member, who is not long for the movie, dies very shortly thereafter, that the right thing to do is to try and save everyone the best she can. And she does a well enough job of landing nobody except for the poor dude that gets impaled. Everybody else seems like they're pretty much okay. And after they crash land, everyone wakes up. Everyone, that is, except for Riddick, who has got some kind of like police tape on his cryo tube that says, you know, don't wake him up. No matter what you do, don't wake him up. So everybody else is kind of out and about looking for how the hell they're going to get off this planet, I guess. There are times in this movie where the humor, it's like, oh, we need to tell a joke now. And
they're so poorly written and way out of place.
They are poorly. Actually, yeah, I agree on both facts. This first one I wrote down, I don't know who says the line because I couldn't see anybody's lips moving. I think it came from a character that was standing behind another character, but they were talking to Fry and about, you know, thanks for saving our dicks is what some lady, some female characters, and it had to be the maybe the curly haired lady because there really weren't that many.
Oh yeah, I forgot. There was only at this point. There's yes. only one other female character.
Right. So I mean, I guess it had to be her.
Yeah.
But at that point, like I wasn't really certain where that came from. But she said, thanks for saving our dicks. So I got a little chuckle out of that. One of the things, you know, that Johns, the bounty hunter character, says about Riddick is that he's, when he broke out of the prison, he's absolutely merciless. He doesn't really, at this point, tell you how Riddick broke out. There's kind of little bits and pieces that get disseminated throughout the rest of the movie. But when we first see Riddick, I don't know how he gets out of his pod. I don't think that's ever explained.
Nope.
But
no need.
He drops from the ceiling and tries to kill Johns by choking him with his feet cuffs or whatever, ankle cuffs, whatever those are called. Doesn't work out quite so well as Johns ends up getting the better of him. They kind of lock him around a post or something because at this point, Riddick is still the baddest dude on whatever planet he's on. He has sort of G.I. Joe arms where they seem to rotate 360 degrees.
Yeah, there's a shot later that's very G.I. Joe arms.
And I've got that written down too, but this is I wanted to mention it. This is kind of the first instance where it seems that Riddick's arms, and we find out later about his eyes not being quite the same as everyone else's eyes, but I guess his arms are not the same either as they have full.
But that's never addressed.
Oh, it is.
Is it?
Yeah. Hmm. They have full 360-degree motion. The arms aren't addressed. I have no
idea.
That's
what I mean.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. No, you're right there. That is never addressed. It's just up for me in my notes writing, really? Maybe that's how he escaped from prison. He just snaked his arm through. He's like Reed Richards, I guess. This planet that they've crashed on, three suns. There are two of them.
So plenty of daylight.
Plenty of daylight. In a movie called Pitch Black, wait a minute. I don't really see where the blacks coming in here. There are three suns.
Keith David's been in there already.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, my God. Three suns. There are two that are grouped together, and there is one blue one off all by itself. And apparently, walking towards the blue sun puts you and everyone else in just a blue light that lasts for like 20 minutes solid, and it is annoying.
Very annoying. Like it's a common theme throughout the entire movie where he just changes colors and tones and just he does weird fishy eye lens stuff for no reason, and it's just I'm all for using colors to set the tone, but it's like he just like, oh, here's this cool blue filter, let's use it.
Well, that's the thing. If you want to use a color to set a tone, that's fine if it makes sense. But
it
putting a filter
sense.
In front of the camera isn't using color.
Uh-uh.
It just seems like when you get a camera, you're like, oh, sepia tone. I'm going to take a bunch of pictures.
That's exactly
sepia.
What I was trying to convey. That's a better way to put it. Like, hey, I have this. I might as well use it.
I paid extra for this at Best Buy, so I'm going to shoot a movie in it. But it really makes you happy when you see a shot that's just regular color photography. It's like, oh my God, thank you. Where did you
but
go?
But even the regular color looked, it was shot weird. It was like grainy.
But after the blue.
Oh, I know.
I would take the Zapruder film over the blue. I just got so tired of that. Nothing apparently will unite a group of survivors like a manhunt for a dangerous criminal. After G.I. Joe Arms gets loose, it seems like everybody is pretty interested in catching him. I don't understand why. I think I would just let him go.
Yeah.
I understand the bounty hunter wanting to catch him, but as an antiquities
dealer.
Everybody
else.
Yeah. What would I care?
As a dude with an accent that turns on and off with, four kids and a nerdy dude and Roger Mitchell and the other girl, like, I don't understand.
It seemed like a bad strategy. And I don't know why Riddick wouldn't necessarily just want to run away because he doesn't really seem like he's trying to get away. He seems like he's kind of stalking the group, but not really.
And that's one of the most, I know it's, I'm jumping ahead
I'm coming to it, so go ahead.
It's such an eye roll moment where they're like, oh, I can't find Riddick, blah, blah, blah. Then they walk away and he's just like sitting on top of something, just like sitting in a lawn chair, taking a sip of something.
Yeah, I mean,
like, just in the background, just chilling. Like,
there,
what?
There comes a scene. They've been out looking for Riddick. They haven't been able to find him. So we come back and we see the curly haired lady. And I don't know if that's her kid.
Yeah, I didn't understand the kids.
They seem to be hooked
up. It seemed
up.
Like the kids kept multiplying. Like, I thought there were two, and then all of a sudden I realized near the end, like, oh, wait, there were four of them?
And I'm not sure how the guardianship of any of them worked.
See, I don't know if they...
It was pretty clear the ones that belonged to Keith David, but...
See, I think there were four kids or two that regenerated a couple times. I couldn't really follow it.
But at any rate, there was... One child with the curly-haired lady and the aforementioned nerdy dude are all kind of back at the ship. And you see this crazy dude come running up and you're thinking, oh, maybe he's, you know, a survivor from earlier in this planet's history. I'm not really sure. But he is not long for the movie as he gets blasted by our other foreign dude, who I guess belongs with the curly-haired lady. And his excuse for just blasting this guy on sight was, oh, I thought that was Riddick.
I thought it was Riddick, yeah.
They've seen Riddick. They know what he looks like. He doesn't look like this dude, but he gets blasted nonetheless. The excuse is, well, I thought that was Riddick. We don't know where he's at. I thought it was him. And then you see him kind of in the background sitting on top of this other part of the ship under a umbrella drinking some sort of beverage, just kind of chillaxing.
Like, again, a poorly written, poorly timed joke.
Yeah, it's, oh, look at Riddick, he's so silly, which is, you know, not at all what you're portraying the character to be. He's supposed to be a monster. I think he probably calls himself a monster several times at this point. And shortly after that, the bald kid, I guess we'll say, develops some sort of an affinity towards Riddick. Maybe it's because he's so goofy or he's a fun guy. Who knows? But this bald kid is dressing like Riddick and trying to, you know, hang out with him and chip away at that hard, stony exterior. And this is kind of when he talks about his eyes, because you've seen him with these goggles on. I don't know exactly when you first get your hint that he has some sort of extra sensory power, but, you know, he starts talking about his eyes at this point and how he was in prison, never supposed to see the light of day again, traded a doctor 20 menthol cigarettes to have his eyes shined up so that he could see in the dark, see people that are sneaking up to shank him. And I thought, boy, what worse place could you be with the ability to see in the dark than a planet that has three suns on it?
Yeah, that's just poor luck.
Yeah, at least landing on any other planet, you'd probably about have half and half, like you'd be okay. But clearly Riddick is at the disadvantage here. And I think karma kind of comes back around in the form of these hammerhead sharks. They're meeting out their own sort of backworld justice, as if you kill a dude, nobody says anything about the accidental shooting of this guy who was innocent. Just kind of bury him, move on pretty quickly. And I don't know what the guy's name is, but the Australian guy,
yeah,
or New Zealand, whatever, wherever he was from, the killer. The actual stone cold killer, the guy that should have been in prison, not Riddick, based on the evidence that we've seen in this film, gets eaten by something.
Something underground?
Something
apparently?
Underground, yeah, as he's digging holes or something. So he gets taken care of. And again, that causes these refugees to want to deduce, well, what happened to this guy? What ate this guy? Again,
obviously Riddick.
Obviously Riddick. Again, it kind of bothers me in that, okay, Riddick is a dangerous character. He's not with us anymore. Let's go find him. Okay, this guy got eaten in this hole by something that appears to be dangerous. Maybe it's Riddick. Whatever.
Let's go find him.
Let's go find it. Yeah, it just seems like they're always really looking for trouble. And boy, does Fry find it when she gets down in this hole, sees what I kind of wrote down as hammerhead sharks with legs and wings, all sorts of stuff. Clearly not a bald man.
No.
No. So it's not Riddick. He's exonerated from killing this other
dude.
Well,
this is after he's told them that he's not what they should worry about.
Oh, sure.
Because he knows what's going on this planet for some reason.
Yeah, that's
like, that's never. He suddenly like, I'm not the one you should worry about. It's what did this you should worry about. Like,
he's got some kind of inclination.
Yeah,
maybe it's because he knows. Yeah, I
maybe
really
well traveled.
I can't. I really can't kill a guy. So something that can, you should probably be afraid of. Not so much me. I'm just in here for tax evasion. After they've kind of all come to this conclusion that these creatures are what they really ought to be afraid of, and not Riddick, Johns comes up with this plan to convince Riddick that if he just kind of works with everybody and just behaves himself, that it would be pretty easy to grant him his freedom, say, you know, that Riddick must have died in the ship crash. It'd be very easy for him to kind of get lost in the shuffle. So Riddick kind of becomes just one of the guys. After saying how dangerous this guy is, he's a big-time killer. It didn't take very much. One guy gets kind of eaten, and all of a sudden it's like, well, yeah, let's just go ahead and let this maniac
free. The guy that
free.
Shot a guy gets eaten. So two dead bodies already.
Oh, that's true.
Well, three, counting the dude on the ship. So
yeah. And so, I guess four if you want to count the captain, because he gets it too.
Yeah, so that's four people with Riddick's. You're good ratio. None of them are Riddick, so might as well let him go.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're really 0-4 with keeping this guy in chains. What's going to happen when we let him out? You get your first kind of Riddick interaction with everyone else when he meets this nerdy guy. And he introduces himself as, what, Richard R. Riddick? Like Richard A. Riddick?
Yeah,
I just wrote down, like,
full name.
Yeah, Dick
Richard
Riddick.
Richard P. Riddick.
Yeah, escaped convict, murderer. I thought that was a line that, you know, if somebody with any kind of charisma were to be able to deliver that line, it could have been really cool. But with Vin Diesel, it just comes across so flat.
We might talk about that kind of delivery a little bit later.
Oh, yeah. It comes up again. But it's just, I kind of got to thinking about, like, Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool. Like, that would be a line that, like, would be a great Deadpool line that if someone like Ryan Reynolds would deliver, it would be able to kind of stand up. But it doesn't in this movie. And it's not the last time that they will give Riddick some comedic aspects. As these guys are, and ladies, because there are a couple at this point, at least two. As they're kind of combing the countryside, they come across some sort of scientific outpost built by someone, abandoned by someone, and there was a map of, I guess, the solar system for this planet with a trundle wheel counter.
Very easy to use to figure out.
That.
In short, instead of make it easy like they did in the movie, was in short, there's this device that she just had to turn a dial 21 times and realize that, all this stuff's from 21 years ago. There was a giant eclipse.
Yeah, the model, you know, it shows how the planets move in a year. And sure enough, every 22 years, all three suns, there is an eclipse. So there will be pitch black, pitch darkness for probably an entire year. That was my guess. I don't think they ever said exactly how long it would last. Too long for them to just sit there and wait it out. Long enough, nonetheless. And so we know that the eclipse is coming. It hasn't quite happened yet. But before it does, there's a scene with Johns and with Fry, and they're talking about this deal that they've made, well, by they, I really mean Johns, has made with Riddick about his freedom. And he's saying, Johns is saying that, you know, there's no way I'm letting him go free. I'm going to kill him. You know, we're going to use him for what we need, and then we're going to kill him. So, I mean, at this point, it definitely, there's supposed to be at least a shift into, all right, Johns is a bad guy. He's not, you know, the good guy that he sort of was throughout the first half of the movie, and maybe this Riddick guy is not as bad as everyone says he is. We should be, you know, somewhat sympathetic to his plight.
No, again, it's just anything this it tried to do, it just forced it so hard. Like, instead of just subtly doing anything, it just shoved it down your throats.
Yeah, it was kind of spelled out, like, we are going to double-cross Riddick. This is the plan all along. So spelling out so far in advance kind of takes away any of the possible intrigue that there may be. But nonetheless, that's the plan. So we know that Riddick better be on the lookout, because he's about to get screwed over by Johns. After the eclipse does happen, it's kind of when business starts to pick up here. Now, I mean, granted, we've got what we count 4 dead bodies already.
Yeah, but this is what the note I took as the eclipse happened and the flying hammerheads or whatever came out.
Yes.
This is my note. Takes a damn hour for anything to happen. Monsters are lame. They just looked terrible. They looked stupid. And you're an hour into the movie and they've tried to have all this. I'm not saying, like, I need action nonstop. I love a slow burn, especially in this kind of movie. But I need something there that's cooking, and there was nothing. They tried to have character development stuff, but it didn't work. It all felt flat. Like, I'm all for wait an hour for the action to happen and let me know these characters. I don't know anything about Nerdy Dude or Keith David or the 2 to 4 children that are with them. Like, I don't – the curly-haired chick. I don't know anything about any of these, because there's no effort towards anything. And it's all focused on Roger Mitchell, Cole Hauser, and Riddick. And I don't care about any of them. Like, she's somewhat compelling. She's the only one showing any sort of, like, range at all. But everything else, it's just like – it's like it was trying to be a movie I would love, but just failing in every way imaginable.
Well, there's no real point in getting to know too much about the brunette chick, because as soon as the lights go out, she goes out. She gets ripped in half. And I think that it's very appropriate to the point that I want to make is this movie seemed like it was two movies. It was in halves. The first half was the slow burn. They were trying to set up character development and inner turmoil between, you know, Riddick, is he a good guy, is he a bad guy? Fry, you know, is she selfish in it for herself, or is she going to step up and take responsibility, be the captain, be the, you know, the figure of responsibility? Is Johns, you know, a good guy, or is he a bad guy? And this is all set up and really forced down your throat in the first hour. None of it is done well.
No.
But that's the main thrust of the movie.
Yeah. It's all, there was no journey to take. Like, you could sit there and watch and think, okay, when something I need to know happens, they're going to hit me over the head with it. So I don't have to follow it, because when a character makes a key character turning point, there's going to be dialogue about it. And that's just a lazy, terrible approach to it. So I didn't care about anybody.
Which really kind of sets up the first half of the movie to be sort of weak, in your opinion, because that's what the first half of the movie is. But the second half, it's kind of like, well, all right, maybe we didn't do so well on the setting up the characters. So let's just kill them all now. It really does kind of just go into your sci-fi alien action monster movie at that point.
Yeah, and if this movie wanted to be Alien or Aliens, and it just wasn't even close. Because Alien was your sci-fi, like, thriller, horror, action, with everything this tried to accomplish. Ripley was a great character. Ripley's a character, yes, build a trilogy around her. Riddick, not so much. Everything about it, like, you could tell that Twohy probably got off to Alien a bunch, like, leading up to the writing of this, because he tried to be so like it, kind of, and it fell so flat.
He didn't write this one. He directed this one.
And he got writing credit. He took a script from other people.
The Wheats. Yeah. Jim Wheat and Ken Wheat.
Yeah, they worked together, and then he rewrote the script.
I mean, I think Aliens, it's probably a good way to start if you're going to be making a sci-fi alien movie. But this one, I guess, was... it doesn't come with the suspense that Alien comes with, and it doesn't have necessarily the action and fun that Aliens has.
And that's the thing, is if you want to do like a sci-fi monster horror, like horror-ish thriller, you need to take that slow burn mentality that they took and make the characters count, and then say, look at The Descent. I'll compare it to The Descent. The Descent is a slow build, but it's awesome. You get to know the characters.
Yeah.
You care about the characters. And then when it goes down, you're invested in it. You could take that approach, Or you could take the, we're just going to make a popcorn movie flat out from the gate. It's going to, we're going to do a 20-minute crash scene, and then we're just going to keep the adrenaline going, and we're just going to make a flat-out action movie. This movie tried to do both at two different times and kind of failed at both.
Yeah, I think it did. It kind of felt like they just tapped out halfway through the movie and said, you know, whatever we've done trying to set up an inner conflict in these characters, we can't do it the entire movie. At some point, we have to move into this phase where
we have to realize we have Vin Diesel as our lead.
Like, yeah.
He's got to get punchy.
Although I will say this, it's not Alien, it's not Aliens, but it did seem pretty close to Alien 3 in that, and I don't want to just say because, well, that one took place in a prison, Riddick was a prisoner, but at least, you know, there were, the character that Ripley's sort of involved with in 3 is a rapist. And, you know, the fact that she's a woman on this planet full of men, you know, you're kind of not sure how this character is going to be able to handle it. So, you know, there's a little bit, we'll be careful about this guy. And that wasn't even done all that well in Alien 3. And you're not sure her allies, how they're going to be able to work with her. In this, I never got the feeling that Riddick was going to, you know, kill anybody.
No.
Or...
He felt like the lead of the movie the entire time. He never felt like an anti-hero.
Like the hero of the movie, yeah.
Yeah, he never felt like an anti-hero. He felt like the hero.
Yeah, that's it. Never does he feel...
Yeah, there was never a threat. He never felt threatening.
He does seemingly get a bit more responsibility within the group, a little more rope on his leash, so to speak. And at one point, they've decided this is how they're going to get off this planet. They're going to go back to their crash ship, get the batteries, take them to the science compound where there is a smaller ship that they're all going to be able to put these batteries in and fly away. Great. They're in transit from point A to point B, and it's a good thing that Riddick's got these shiny eyeballs because he's the only one that's able to see in the dark.
I know exactly where you're going, and this comes up in one of my later lists.
Okay,
we'll
so do you want to skip it?
No, we'll talk about it now.
Okay. We get a line from Riddick where he says... All right, look clear.
So it shows his eyes what he sees. It looks clear.
Yep.
So he says, it looks clear.
Turns out, not so much. One of the hammerhead shark creatures flies out of this, I don't know if it was a building or whatever, they were standing right in front of, almost takes out Riddick and Johns, and he says something to the effect that, oh, I thought you said
it. You said it was clear.
Yeah.
I said it looks clear. What's it look like now?
It looks clear. Yeah.
That was later on. I have the top five terribly delivered jokes by Vin Diesel.
And they are. I mean, I don't think that that's necessarily a poorly written joke. I liked
that. It's a poorly written joke. Poorly delivered joke. It's an okay joke.
Yeah, I liked
because there's another,
the words there.
Yeah, the dialogue was good. It was terribly delivered on both ends. Like, even the number four joke that we'll get to later, it's a good joke. But Vin Diesel delivered it so terribly because it looks clear. That's a good line. Like,
yeah.
That exchange is funny in theory.
In theory, that's the thing. Like, I'm thinking of somebody like it was really dry. So I'm thinking, like, Bill Murray would do an awesome job with a line like that. I realize there's quite a vast chasm of talent between Bill Murray and Vin Diesel. But for God's sake, if I were the writers, I would be really pissed that they cast Vin Diesel in this movie because the writing is not great, but it's not bad. It's
like
not
you said,
as bad.
With a charismatic lead, Riddick might not be that bad. And if you put a charismatic actor in there and you don't shove it down our throat and let us take the journey of finding out who this character is on our own instead of telling us what the journey is, it might not be that bad. But they swung and a miss on both of those.
Swing and a miss indeed. I've got three spoiler alerts for you. My notes here at the end start to come kind of fast and quick, so we'll just go ahead and hit all three of them at once. We've been kind of hinting to this the whole time, that there have been at least two girls. We find out that there's a third.
Yeah.
The bald kid, Jack, find out is a girl because
Vin Diesel can smell her period.
Yes.
That's essentially what it
that's
is.
That's absolutely what it is.
But before we get to finding out that dude's a girl, I did have the one positive thing I want to say. The one positive thing I want to say is there was a very cool shot that was actually delivered. Everything about it was done well. And again, the director did so many weird things with the camera that I'll give him credit for this one shot. It's when Nerdy Dude separates from the group and he can kind of tell something's around him, but it's dark. And he lights his lighter and spits on it, and you see a quick burst of flame. And it's a wide shot where you see that he's surrounded by these things. It's a real quick shot, but it's the most well-executed thing in the entire movie.
I did kind of like it. I think at this point I'm kind of gun-shy about saying anything positive about the movie, but I did think that was kind of neat.
That was a cool shot.
And then they went on to kind of beat you over the head again by showing the Riddick vision of this dude getting ripped in half. I didn't think we need that. If they'd have just stayed with the puff of flame and all the monsters, you'd get the point. You know, the guy was pretty much done.
It erases that. Everything positive erases itself pretty quick.
Yeah.
Because we find out the one dude's on his period. And then there's, I'm jumping ahead here for you, the dialogue between Riddick and Cole Hauser. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's not so good.
I don't write UGG very much, UGH, in notes. This one sentence, I have it twice.
Johns and Riddick kind of separate themselves from the group for a bit. And, you know, Johns mentions that they should probably try and kill somebody and drag them, the body, behind, because these things are attracted to blood. So if you kill somebody and kind of use it as sort of bait, some kind of bone for these things to chew on and, like, get so you can get away, that would be okay. But that kind of completes the John's turn, is now he's a bad guy. And Vin Diesel, in a very much a Vin Diesel way, lets him know that I think this is a good idea, but we don't agree 100%.
And then it goes into showdown mode where close up of Vin Diesel.
Because Vin Diesel thinks that he should kill John's.
Close up of Vin Diesel's eyes, close up of Cole Hauser's eyes. Close up of Vin Diesel's eyes. Close up of Vin. And then rapid fire back and forth of the eyes. And then they're fighting. It's the lamest, most ridiculous, stupid editing trick I've ever seen in my life.
You might say UGG.
I did say UGG. Because then shortly after they're fighting, Vin Diesel's elbow completely hyperextends and he just pushes it back and just keeps fighting.
Arms.
It was in. Like, I literally groaned out loud twice within, like, 2 minutes, because that camera trick was so lame. And what is with the arms? Why is it not explained?
Probably because it's silly enough that it can't be explained. But that is kind of the second trick that makes you think that Riddick may in fact be Mr. Fantastic. Shortly thereafter, spoiler alert, Riddick defeats Johns, and only really by cutting him on the back and then letting the animals kill him. So we're however many
he
bodies
still
at
hasn't
this point,
killed anybody.
Right? The body count for Riddick is still zero. Yeah. The guy that got ripped up at the very beginning that accidentally shot a dude, one. Riddick, zero.
You know what I want to compare this to right now? We talked about how it shoved down our throat that Riddick is so vicious and he's such a killer, but yet he's killed nobody. And we talked about you need an anti-hero to show that he's willing to do what it takes to be a hero. Vin Diesel hasn't killed anybody in this movie. You go look at Serenity, Nathan Fillion is Mal Reynolds, who is the lead of the movie, very charismatic. He is an anti-hero. In the movie, before it even gets to the climax, he kills 3 unarmed men. So, like, Mal Reynolds in this, like, comedy, like, sci-fi action comedy, has a higher body count than this dangerous killer.
Or, I mean, along those lines, if you want to use an example that people are going to care about, Han Solo. Does the same thing. Shoots Greedo. He shoots first.
I saw it differently.
Did you?
I saw Greedo shoot first.
That never happened. I don't know what you think you saw, but you did not see it. Either way, at least those are examples of where, you know, they've kind of earned the anti part of the anti-hero as opposed to just getting it through monologue. But if you had any thought of whether Riddick's a good guy or a bad guy, this kind of proves that he is Mr. Fantastic. He does have a heart of gold when it appears that the now little girl, Jack, is in danger of getting eaten by our hammerhead shark. And Vin Diesel
fights it by hand.
Yep, could have got away, but instead he comes back and literally goes prison yard on the thing.
Yeah, but sadly it's shot so terribly that you really don't know. You see camera movement, camera movement, camera movement, guts come out. So, like, you really don't see what he does. Like, he doesn't really fight the animal. I don't know what happened there. It's just, it was such a terrible shot. Like most of the action, and to be honest, most of the movie.
Lots of slashing and stabbing you can perceive die or perceive happen there. Animal ended up dead either way. So Riddick gets his first kill in the movie. Finally, it's taken, you know, about an hour and a half at this point.
This movie is long, by the way.
He's on the board. It's about 2 hours long.
This movie is almost 2 hours long. There's no way Pitch Black should be almost 2 hours long.
I don't think there's about any movie that should be. I have 90 minutes is kind of my cutoff for everything. But nonetheless, finally Riddick on the board. Starting to lose people that he can possibly protect. At this point, where I'm going to jump to, we're down to Keith David. He now has none of his 2 to 4 kids. They've all been mauled in very violent ways.
I think we're down to just the one child.
Yes, we are down to the Jack child, the Hishi child, and, of course, Fry. They are locked in a cave by Vin Diesel as he kind of, you're not really sure what he's doing. He's pulling the batteries single-handedly to the ship, and you're thinking, well, you know, all right, maybe he knows that he can't make it there with everybody else, so he'll just go ahead and set everything up and come back and get them later. Not so much. It kind of looks like he's just going to leave, which does seem like they've taken so much time to say Riddick's a bad guy. They've showed him being a good guy to kind of him flippantly turning back into a selfish dude seems really, really strange. But he gets kind of found out by Fry, who breaks out of the cave, and she's there to confront him.
And this is, again, it's hit over the head. Like, he's trying to convince Fry, just come with me. Just come with me. But it's not, it's like literally spelled out 20 times in case you miss it the first 30 seconds of setting it up. Like, they just keep going about, just come with me. And she's like, no, I don't want to come with you. He's like, just come with me. And then it didn't. There's just like 2 minutes of dialogue that doesn't need to be there. And then they fight.
At one point, it looks like she is just going to come with him. But then she has sort of that last second change of heart where she tackles this dangerous criminal who's, you know, apparently bested many, many people in hand-to-hand combat, but not a 115-pound docking pilot. There is the fight, and she says to Riddick, and this kind of completes her journey as a character, that she's willing to die for these. Well, really, at this point, it's just Keith David and the little Hishi.
She's willing to die for these people that she was willing to just kill earlier in the movie.
Right. So she's come 180 degrees from where she
but
was
But really,
before.
There's no reason for it. Like, at no point did she seem to bond with David Keith or Keith David.
Keith David.
She didn't bond with them. She didn't seem to bond with Jack. Like, there was no, like, it was like her arc just went from point A to point B, and there was nothing in between it. You didn't see her gradually change character. It just happened. Just like Riddick. He went from, I'm going to fight this thing for this little girl, to, screw you. I don't care.
Screw you guys. I'm going home. But either way, the characters are sort of, they are where they are now. Fry's decided she'll die for these people, so she goes back to go collect Keith David and Jack the Hishi, and we find out that in fact she will die for these other two, but not for Riddick. Turns out she actually does end up dying for Riddick. She's got everybody on the ship. She could very easily double cross Riddick and just leave him to prison yard the rest of these aliens all by himself, but she goes back for him. And doesn't really provide him with all that much help, but does manage to get killed in the process.
That, I like the idea of that scene, and it was almost done well. I liked that because that was a change that wasn't like beat over the head. It was like she sees him. There's no inner monologue like, I could leave him. Like, the rest of the movie is pretty much stuff like that. Like, you see it in her face that she could leave him, but she doesn't.
Because she, at that point, her character is good. She knows it's the right thing to do to go back.
So, like, that scene I liked the idea of. It was getting there. Like, the movie did get gradually better. By this point, it's still crap, but it's a lot better crap than it was an hour and 45 minutes ago.
I was a little bit surprised, and you talk about the descent and when, you know, characters die and you really are kind of invested. I mean, you're not nearly to that point with any of these characters, but I was a little bit surprised the first viewing that they did end up killing Fry after, you know, setting her up and having her do that character transformation just to kind of offer.
And then the Vin Diesel reaction is actually the first acting he did the entire movie. And again, not hit over the head. Like, you can tell, like, oh, he realizes that she's only dying because she came out to save him. And that's conveyed in that one look that he gives. But that's the only time he acted the entire movie.
Which maybe finally sets Riddick as a good dude. Somebody finally did something nice for him, which, you know, maybe had never happened at that point in his life. But he's a good dude now. Gets on the ship and he's willing to. Good thing he's a pilot, too.
That was set up earlier.
Yeah.
That's how he escaped from prison. So it was set up that he was a pilot.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, the seeds could have been planted long ago that, you know, we really don't need two pilots. Which one of these do you think we're going to end up killing? But it still surprised me when it happened.
Yeah, and then a terrible Vin Diesel line that I'll get to in a second that's just...
That is kind of... I like to end the podcast with the last line of the movie, and it was, in fact, delivered by Vin Diesel. So maybe we'll save that for the very, very end. But I don't think I need to ask you your overall opinions of the movie. I don't think you liked it that much, did you?
I didn't. I made a top five list that we try to sometimes do these. These are the top five terrible things about Pitch Black. Number five, the terrible plot. Thought the plot, okay, dark planet with a dude who can see in the dark. Dumb. Number four, terrible writing, terrible dialogue. The story makes no sense, but yet which doesn't matter when you don't try to have a story. They tried to have a legit story. Number three, the terrible acting. Cole Hauser, terrible. Vin Diesel, terrible. Roger Mitchell had moments, but overall terrible. Keith David, who I like, showed up. I don't know if it was like a week at a time without an accent, and the next week he'd have an accent, or he would alternate days where he's talking in an accent and then not talking. I didn't understand that. His accent came and went. Number two, terrible directing. I hated how this movie was directed. The different weird fisheye lens things, the cutting to Vin Diesel's vision, to the aliens' visions, the blue, the green, the graininess of it. I hated everything about how this was directed. And number one, Vin Diesel. Just flat. Like, just not a good lead. But that leads into my top five terribly delivered jokes by Vin Diesel. Number four, five we talked about. It looks clear. Number four, this is another one. I actually like the joke. Vin Diesel's talking to Cole Hauser, and weapons come up, and he's talking about prison. And the Jack is down there saying, like, oh, cool things, blah, 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 talking about the guns and, like, anything about the guns or about prison, Jack is, like, into. And then Jack says something really morbid about, like, killing people or something. And Cole Hauser sends her upstairs. And then Vin Diesel just goes, cute kid. Like, I like that joke, but it was delivered terribly. The other ones aren't really jokes. They're just opportunities to where they should have been jokes.
They could have been jokes if they were delivered by someone with a sense of humor.
They could have been jokes, or they could have been like a one-liner, like an action movie one-liner to where you kill somebody and you, like a Bruce Willis, a classic Bruce Willis.
I was thinking, like, Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, like that. Like something to establish a character. But number three, he fights this animal by hand. All he can say is, it did not know who it was fucking with. But he delivers
it. True, it did not.
He delivers it like it's a joke.
Or like it should be a catchphrase.
Yeah. Like he delivers it like that should be a joke, but it's not. I'll skip my number two because Ryan wants to get to that. But then the number one, the worst, just terrible, talking to Roger Mitchell about going outside. You aren't afraid of the dark, are you?
Well, I hope not, because the second half of this movie is going to be dark.
But like number two, I'll let Ryan. I'll save it for Ryan at the end. It just he powers the ship up. He powers the ship down. And then they're like, what are you doing? And then he powers the ship up.
Oh, no, go ahead, because I'm going to do a line that comes after that.
Remember if there's – I was so busy groaning from this line that I didn't know there was another line after.
Yeah, no, this can be your number two or number one.
He just says, we can't leave until I say goodnight. Then he flips on the jets, burns like four of them, runs over one on the way out. So he got that final vindication on like five of them.
Puts his kill count up to like six or seven or whatever it ends up being. Not all that impressive. But nonetheless, that is kind of how the movie ends. Your overall thoughts and impressions, not very good. Do you have any interest in seeing the new one, which looks an awful lot like the old one?
It looks exactly like this one.
It does.
I don't. Like, I don't know if it's the same planet or if it's another dark planet with another eclipse. Like, it just...
It does seem a little way too familiar that Riddick would again be left for dead on a planet that has monsters on it and... bounty hunters show up to try and get him again, which seems to be kind of the story of his life. But you know what? I kind of think that I'll give it a try because, I mean, I for whatever it's worth, I thought Pitch Black was all right. I'm not going to go see Riddick like opening night. I may not see it in theaters, but I was well enough entertained by Pitch Black. I don't think it needed to be 2 hours. If it would have been... It
didn't need to be three movies.
No, well, that's probably true. If Chronicles of Riddick didn't exist and this was just the sequel to Pitch Black, I would think to myself, boy, why is he on this planet again? But it seems like it would make much more sense. The movies are tonally look like they're pretty similar. But, I mean, if you're going to have, you know, a sequel that's closer to Chronicles of Riddick or, you know, Pitch Black, I'm glad it's closer to Pitch Black. One thing that I do think is interesting that we haven't mentioned yet about Riddick is that, you know, where a lot of movies are kind of going to Kickstarter now for funding, say what you want about Vin Diesel, but you know, he mortgaged his house to get this movie rated R, which Chronicles of Riddick was PG-13, and it did kind of lack for some of the F-bombs and the gratuitous violence. But, I mean, I do give Vin Diesel credit for really kind of putting his money where his mouth is. And so I hope he doesn't lose his house. But any final thoughts on Pitch Dark, Pitch Black? I don't know.
It's no Pitch Perfect.
No, that it is not. Although the movie would have been better with Anna Kendrick.
It's far from Pitch Perfect.
Far from Pitch Perfect. Rick died somewhere on that planet, Dave. And that is where our discussion of Pitch Black will die. But Movies On Up will live on. This week, we're going to be coming back with our fall-winter preview episode. We're going to kind of run down all the movies September through the end of the year. And we've got some other kind of fun things planned for next episode.
Yeah. Yeah, we do.
I don't know what they are.
I don't either. You would. Okay. I thought you were.
Fair enough. Well, I guess it'll be a surprise for both of us and for you when you get there next week. But before we... close out this week and get to next week, we've got a bonus watch this. It was a movie that was written by David Twohy, not necessarily directed by him, but just written in addition to his work on the Riddick series. He's got a couple other credits to his name. Dave, why don't you give the folks just a one of them?
His first writing credit, Critters 2. Actually, I like Critters. I like all the Critters movies.
Was that was the one with Leo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that was... 3, I believe.
Was it?
I'd have to double check. But I like them all. And then this movie called Blow. He actually directed it. It's similar to Pitch Black, where he took a script from another screenwriter and then got the and credit, not the ampersand. Directed it. Written by, originally, a young Darren Aronofsky. Zach Galifianakis. I say starring Zach Galifianakis. He's in it. That's the only reason
probably
I watched it when
term.
It came out. But yeah, it's just a submarine movie. It's a lot like... It's another one that tries to be a slow burn. It's better than Pitch Black, which isn't saying a lot, but it's okay. It's worth a watch.
I will give you one that same genre as Critters came out, I believe, like a year or two afterwards. It was 1989's Warlock. A time-traveling warlock exits the 17th century in modern day, and he's got a witch hunter that's kind of tracking him down. I remember it being one of the very early movies that I saw that was kind of gory for the time. it doesn't really hold up all that well now. But 89, I would have been in kindergarten. So I was, you know, probably like 7 by the time I actually saw the movie on VHS. But, you know, we talk about like the VHS box for Ghoulies, how like that always kind of stuck with you. This was another one, like the cover art always stuck with me. And it was just the dude standing there in the big demon shadow behind him.
Julian Sands. I like the Warlock movies. It went on to become a franchise.
It did. And you think the first one doesn't hold up. You should watch some of the later ones.
Yeah.
They're garbage. And this one's not, it's not going to win. And it didn't win any Academy Awards, but I thought it was,
the tagline of Satan also has one son.
God did too.
I liked the movie. Jesus. I liked Warlock.
Yeah, fair enough.
He also got co-writing credit on Waterworld.
Quite a varied career for Mr. Twohy. Kind of a varied opinion that we have on Pitch Black. One of us will watch it again if forced to. The other one is Dave. That'll wrap up our episode for this week.
Tune in later this week. We have our fall preview. Ryan touched on it. Box Office Bash is wrapped up. Numbers are all tallied up. But we're going to announce the winner in 2 weeks when we have our Fantasy Film Ball draft party episode. So don't do the math on your own. Just wait for us.
Spoiler alert.
We'll announce a winner in 2 weeks. But later this week is going to be our fall winter preview, which is going to be fun. Find me at Dave Bacella or DaveBacella.com.
Find me later on this week on our next episode, the fall winter preview. And until then,
keep it up.